I shall be no more. Then what will there be? There will be nothing. Then where shall I be when I am no more? Can this be dying? No, I will not have it. He jumped up and tried to light the candle, fumbled about with trembling hands, dropped the candle and candlestick on the floor, and fell back upon the pillow. What's the use? It makes no difference, he said to himself, staring with wide-open eyes into the darkness. Death. Yes, death. And they none of them understand, or want to understand, and they feel no pity for me. They are enjoying themselves. He heard through the closed door the distant cadence of a song and its accompaniment. They don't care, but they will die too. Fools. 'Twill be a little sooner for me, and a little later for them. That's all. Their turn will come. But now they are making merry. The brutes. Anger choked him, and he was agonizingly, intolerably wretched. It cannot be that all men always have been doomed to suffer this awful horror, he raised himself.
Okay. That was an extract from the book that we will be talking about today on the Book Boys podcast. Episode 7 already. I am your host, Max, and I'm here with my co-host.
LOL.
Okay, let's get into it. So, we read a book, I think we prefaced it a bit on the last podcast.
Yeah,
I mentioned it. Leo Tolstoy, called The Death of Ivan Ilyich.
Yeah. So maybe you want to start by saying how you found the book, because I thought that was pretty interesting, I was already reading it for a while now, but I hadn't really gotten into it because I was reading more than one book at the same time, and then Max came to me.
Yeah, so I went to a secondhand bookstore together with my gracious mother, and we were just walking around, and we were looking at some books, and it was a Dutch, we live in Holland, so there's usually not a lot of English books, but so we were looking through like the shelves and all that, and I found a couple of books I thought looked nice, and then she walked up to me with this book. It's quite a small book by Leo Tolstoy, and obviously I'd heard of him, and I think I'd even heard of this like the title of the book, and then I bought it, and it was, I didn't buy it like, oh, I'm gonna start reading it now. It was more like, it's nice to have this, then at some point I was thinking like in several months I'll read this.
Yeah, it's quite a classic.
Yeah, but then I was talking to Eloi about it, and it turned out that he had the same book. And you know, it's like 90 pages. So I was like,
yeah,
let's do it for the next podcast.
Yeah, so, and I have it in French as well, so.
Yeah, and mine's in English, so there might be some.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, and so I read up on Tolstoy before the podcast.
Yeah,
I
wanted
to give a little background. So he was, it was quite, it was during the Tsar times in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And the most interesting thing I found about him was his death. I've told you this already, but he, so he hated, he had huge fights with his wife most of his life. That rhymes. And at one point, I think he hit 80, and he just got really in a huge fight, and he decided to leave and abandon his family. And so he rode on his horse, rode on his horse into the night, and he was found later that night dead of pneumonia, which is from cold, in the nearby train station, which is pretty interesting and quite an impressive death. And also a lot of people showed up to his funeral, which I thought was
interesting. So he was already famous during his
famous,
lifetime.
Yeah,
exactly. A lot of times with authors,
they become famous after post-mortem.
Death. Yeah, is that what it's called?
I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. So yeah, and this is a very interesting book. It's quite similar, to be honest, to the way he lived, I thought.
Yeah, when you told me that story, I was like, oh, okay.
That maybe makes kind of sense, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm sure he wrote this before that happened. But you know.
Before dying, yeah.
Maybe he saw what was coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, should we maybe just go into like a little plot breakdown?
Exactly, maybe a short summary.
Yeah, so I this is not very long. I guess I could just read what we... And then, like, I'll read it, and then we can discuss about the first part of the book. So, I read this last night.
Me too.
Whole thing last night, and well, it actually didn't. It took me like 2 hours, but
it was very fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it thoroughly, but because I read it in such a short amount of time, because I didn't have a lot of time to like process what was actually going in the story, I decided I would write down like some notes about each part of the book. So
yeah, that's another approach.
This first bit, I'll read you a couple of sentences, is up to chapter 4 of the book. So, chapter 3. Moving around a lot, quarrels with his wife a lot, but seems to have found some equilibrium. Is obsessed with detail and determined to perfect his life, which he insists on having under full control. We have moved from the perspective of Pyotr, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, Ivanovich.
Yeah, to an account of the life of Ivan.
Yeah, because the first chapter is after his death. It's at the funeral of Ivan Ilyich.
Yeah, it's... It's not from the perspective of, but we're kind of third personing this guy called Piotr, who is said to be like his closest friend, and but, they yeah. studied together and they knew each other for a very long time.
But he does not care about Imanish. That's what I got from the him walking around the funeral. He's always like, "Oh, I don't like these people at all," or he tries to avoid.
You think, but he.
I don't think he's a true friend of
Imanish. Really, I thought maybe because of the thing with Schwartz, I think his name was.
Yeah.
And the wife and the butlers and just the people there, he didn't seem to like that, but he did seem very
saddened.
Saddened and very like impressed and like. In the way, not like impressed with it, but like overwhelmed by the situation.
That could be as well.
And he like crossed himself, and when he walked into the room and things like that.
But they do mention that he doesn't look at the casket when he walks past. Yeah. He just walks past and just leaves. But yeah, and then it transitions to the view of Ivan Ilyich.
Yeah, so it's Piotr at the funeral, and then he's like, "Oh, and his life went something like this," and then
we have the view of Ivan Ilyich.
It kind of, he's a lawyer and
he has a good life. I mean, he thinks at that point.
Yeah.
He says he's a brilliant man.
There's a lot of description of his character, of him being like pleasant and kind of reserved and
and he likes pleasing people as well.
Yeah, exactly. So he's also kind of respected.
He's very popular.
He's kind of like this gentleman. But you kind of get the sense that he puts that on as kind of like an act.
He's quite arrogant, I feel.
And he's very much trying to portray
himself in that way. Yeah, and he considers himself quite perfect and above everyone else.
Yeah.
That
becomes especially more apparent towards the end of the book when he does eventually makes
the realization.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and then there's a huge incident in his life at one point, which is that he, while moving in to a bigger house, he's setting up everything, and he's setting up a curtain, and he falls. But it's quite a big fall, but he doesn't make any, he doesn't emphasize it at all.
And funnily enough, he's like, "Oh, I'm an athletic man, I'm young," and all these things, so he just brushes it off.
Yeah, he says, "Oh, nothing happened," and then everyone's worried about him, but he says, "Oh, it's never mind."
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
So he, because we're kind of looking at it from his perspective, when I read that, I was like, okay, why include this in the story? It doesn't really seem very relevant. But then obviously, later on, I think that's even in the next chapter, he starts to feel this pain in his side.
Yeah, and at the beginning, I thought this was kind of fake. I thought it was a mental pain because he says, "Oh, I was getting more and more angry at my wife and my family for no reason." But he says this, and he's always been fighting with his wife.
As a reader, you're kind of piecing together like he's irritated because he's feeling this pain.
Yeah, later on. But in the beginning, I was like, "Oh, he's just blaming. He has this mental sickness because he just gets mad at everyone." But then you realize that when he goes to the doctor, who also stay very vague about his injury, they say, "Oh, it might get better, might not." So it really
leaves him in a terrible state. The 1880s.
Yeah.
So
they don't know what they're doing.
They talk about a lot of doctors and a lot of specialists and all these things. And, I mean, obviously, Leo Tolstoy lived in that time as well.
Exactly, so
that's the way it actually was. Yeah. And these specialists who just kind of, like, looked at him and maybe, like, they didn't do any real examinations.
That's true.
They just listened to what he had to say and then made a conclusion based on that.
And, so his life gets worse and worse, basically. That's the whole point of the story.
The pain, like, gets worse and worse, and he says he has a bad taste in his mouth.
Yeah. A pestilence, I think, or something like death, basically.
Yeah.
And it gets to the point where he's just lying on the couch the whole end of the story, basically.
Yeah.
And
the last 40 pages of the book is just him being very sick,
contemplating.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, and we just kind of dive into his thoughts.
Yeah, and I thought that was the most interesting part. Yeah. The way he meditates, he looks back on his life. That's when he realizes how arrogant he was, and like he says the only good part of my life was my childhood. Yeah, I think.
And then he constantly thinks back to his childhood, but he wants to go away from that because he's how much it saddens him that he was happy in that time.
Yeah, he realizes that was the only good part of his life.
Yeah.
And then, of course, at the end, he dies, which is the title of the story, The Death of Ivan Ilyich.
Yeah, but before his death, and especially a couple of hours before his death, we really get, like, second-by-second description of what he is going through.
Yeah.
So, as Alois said, he goes through all these things that have happened in his life, but then he also starts to kind of deconstruct himself as a character. And why does he act the way that he acts? And why does he hate his wife so much? Because he says several times towards the end of his life, "I hate my wife, I detest her."
Yeah, every time she approaches him, he says he has he's repulsed by her.
Mm-hmm.
And he has huge revelations, though. Exactly at the end, he says, "Oh, I forgive them, I don't, you know, I think he forgives everyone at that point.
Yeah.
I think it's when his youngest son comes to him, and so he caresses his son's head and starts crying, and the son starts crying, and then he says, oh, forgive them, you know,
yeah.
they don't know what they're doing. And in a way, I thought that was kind of like in the Bible, Jesus, when he dies, mm-hmm. says, oh, forgive them, God, they don't know what they're doing. So in a way, he's become kind of like a saint, or in a way, like he's
been kind of...
He's had a revelation.
Yeah, and I think that he's been very much cleansed and has had this revelation because of this pain.
Huge pain.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's made him put other matters in perspective. Like, nothing really matters except death and how well you live your life.
Yeah, and this very analytical state he goes into...
Yeah, it's very psychological, I feel. We very much yeah. see all the stages.
It's such a tone change.
Yeah. A huge tone change.
Yeah, because yeah. The beginning of the book is very much like he was now happy with his job, and his wife was going well. They were fighting sometimes, and then like, oh, they don't have enough money. They go to the countryside. Oh, he's found a new job, so they move in, and he's fixing the apartment and all these things. And then it becomes so existential and like, like philosophical towards
the end. Yeah, he says, why me, why me? And then he responds to himself, he says, it's just because that happened.
Yeah.
I thought of the most interesting part of the novel was the servant.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we haven't talked
about Which we haven't time. Mentioned. I think we should mention him because he's quite a huge part.
Gerasim. Gerasim.
Yeah, I called him Gerasim.
Yeah, that's how I pronounce him.
And they say he's a low-born, very low-born kind of, but well-dressed still servant of the family.
Is he the butler? No, he's the butler's assistant.
Yeah, the main butler is, I think he's called Pyotr as well.
I just wrote down Sikilov.
Yeah, maybe that's the second name. Yeah. That's probably the second name.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. He has a very background part. What's his name again?
Gerasim.
It's a terrible name.
Yeah.
Gerasim. So he's not mentioned at all in the whole story. Up till the point where Ivan Ilyich gets sick. And even then, he doesn't really notice him. It's when they start talking to each other and Gargasim. Holds his...
Gargasim.
What's the real name?
Gerasim.
It's our... Gerasim.
Yeah.
Gerasim holds his feet, and then they start talking, and he realizes that Gerasim is the only person who actually understands him, his sickness, and doesn't complain about it, or isn't saddened at the fact that they won't have any money once he's dead.
Yeah, and when he kind of asks Gerasim about that, it's because Gerasim looks at it in the way... It feels so weird saying his name like that.
Yeah, okay. Gerasim.
Yeah, but he's like... He's doing this because once his moment of death comes, he wishes that someone care for him in the way that he is caring for Ivan.
He says, we're all living, so might as well help others, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that was that was a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
And, this is part of what changes Ivan's view on the world. He discovers that, you know, his family doesn't mean anything to him. Only this low-born servant that he never noticed before cares about him and gives enough time.
At that point, he kind of discovers that all this image and class and wealth, none of it really matters.
Exactly.
It's about the
it's about what's inside.
Yeah.
And after reading on Tolstoy, that's quite a theme that he uses a lot in all his books. So look inside the person before you just... talk to them out of nowhere, you know?
You could even say, don't judge a book by its cover.
Ooh,
you
know? Very nice, very nice.
Book boys for you.
That was very good. And Tolstoy very much, he tries to use his approach of, psychology. Look inside the mind and look on yourself,
reflect on yourself.
Reflect on yourself. Yeah. How can you live better?
Yeah. Wait, that's something that he very much does. He's constantly like, how can I be the best version of myself?
Yeah, but in a bad way, though, in the beginning. He says, I want to be better than anyone.
Even when he reaches that that perfect state, he's still not really happy.
Yeah,
which he is able to admit to himself at the end of the book.
Yeah, it would have been really interesting to see if, like, he suddenly healed at that point. Like, how would he have lived his life further than that?
And at one point, after he's gone through all this agony and all this thinking, he's like, I want to live again.
Yeah.
And
multiple times, he's like, oh, like, he gains hope for something. So first, I think it's the doctors. They say, oh, you might heal. And so he's like, oh, maybe I can will my appendix to heal.
Yeah.
Or my, yeah. And so...
It's either appendicitis or a floating kidney.
Yeah, I didn't, it's a different word in French. That's why I can remember. A floating kidney, yeah. And then, and I think the second time where he gets hope is also when he has his confession with the priest.
That's a very interesting moment.
His wife, he doesn't want to, and then his wife is like, do it for me, which he says a lot throughout the, like, do it for me.
He, at this point already, he hates her.
Yeah.
He's like, just let me die alone, I want you to go away.
Yeah, every time she walks into the room, he's like, I hate her so much.
Exactly.
Deep,
so
deep-fueled rage.
The fact that he accepts this this priest coming to their house and, I don't know, blessing him, or they do something to him, I'm not sure.
It's almost like his humanity is, like, coming back in a way.
Yeah.
Like, I want to live.
Yeah.
And so, and after that, he realizes, he's like... if I wish I hadn't said yes to my wife for this, like, that was the worst moment. And then, like,
does he say that? But isn't, well, he, very, says, isn't first he very happy?
Yeah, first he gets hope. He's like, oh, okay, maybe I'll live, you know, maybe God will help me. And then after, he's like, oh, why did I get hope? I regret saying yes.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very eye-opening, basically.
Yeah. And then towards the very end of the book, he talks, I don't know if it's the same in French, but he talks about like those last couple of hours, he's like trying to fall into a hole.
Yeah, put into a bag. That's what I think is in French.
Yeah,
he's like, they're trying to put him into a deep black bag, and he doesn't want to go in.
Oh, he doesn't want to go in. Here it's very much like, there's some metaphor, but it's basically like trying to fit into something which you don't fit into.
Yeah, that's
how he describes
that. That's the overall message, which I thought was very different to the usual description of death.
Yeah, and then when he says that he falls in, he doesn't die yet.
But he suffers for a huge amount of time. I think it's just his consciousness is just gone after that point. He's just screaming.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he just screams the same like long screams.
But then
three
days.
3 days, right? Yeah, I thought it was nights. It must have been horrible.
Yeah. And then his wife came up to him, and he looked at her. She was gazing at him with his open mouth. The tears went on his cheek. He felt sorry for her. Yes, I'm a misery to them, he thought. So even at the very end, he's very he can still think. I don't know about being conscious, but he can still think with himself.
Yeah, and it's the point where he stops screaming, where we don't even get an insight into his mind, because I think he's just gone at that point.
Yeah.
But I do like coming back to the first chapter.
Okay.
Because after I read it,
there they talk about his death, and then we
see all the people.
So the last. The very last part of the book, the very beginning of the book, is actually where, like, the end. So
yeah, exactly.
It's kind of chopped off the end and then...
But I thought it gave me a new insight. Like, the guy who walks in, he doesn't know anyone, so he just describes them physically.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't realize at all, like, Gerasim is just described as, his poor servant or something, who's alone. And we don't get any insight into that.
Yeah.
And after reading the book, he's the most important person in Ivan's life. Same with the kid as well.
His son,
he was slightly crying and stuff. He just, like,
grazes
past
him. What he does say, which I think is interesting, is, I wrote it down as well, Piotr in the beginning of the book says that the father and son are very alike.
Yeah, they look like each other.
Ivan doesn't seem all too impressed with his son.
Yeah, throughout the whole story.
Which, let me just say something about that, because, this outside perspective thinks the son and the father are alike, and the father is not impressed with the son. And if they're alike, then he's also not impressed
with himself. Ooh, that's a good interpretation.
Yeah.
I hadn't noticed that at all.
And maybe the son is the earlier uncleansed, so to speak, version of Ivan.
Who hasn't gone through all those
horrible
moments. That's a very good point.
But then at the end, Ivan sympathizes with the child.
Yeah, the child's crying a lot, and so he realizes that the son is as sad as his servant and as him.
And that he even says he understands what
what's
Ivan's
going
through.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think that the main antagonists, the wife and the
daughter.
They're both very coincidentally they're both women, which I don't know if that's a statement by Leo Tolstoy. Maybe women in his
1880s,
life.
1880s, maybe that wasn't such a weird thing to say.
Yeah, no, but he has protagonists in other story which are. Women and strong women and nice, but I think just in this story, maybe he's writing about his marriage, just in general about him.
Yeah, because there's a lot of talk about the wife and they're quarreling, and also just his hatred for the wife.
But I thought very interesting that in the beginning, when they're talking about his marriage, they go through all his life, and they're talking about his marriage, well, he's talking about his marriage, and he says he found out that she loved her, and so he accepted to marry her, but he never says that he actually loved her.
Yeah.
At no point does he say, oh, I loved her and I wanted to have children and stuff. But he does say, oh, yeah, it helped me in my position in society, and it was nice to come back home to clean dishes and stuff like that, which is very, like, it seemed horrible.
He says that because she comes from this wealthy family.
Yeah.
He makes her look good.
But, yeah, and also he says that she's not the wealthiest he could have married. He just, he thought it was a good, like, a good choice to make because she was, he,
and then
he thought she was good looking and she had a little bit of money. So.
Yeah, and this, this third person, like, person from what we are seeing, their perspective, says he thinks they're well matched.
Yeah.
So that Ivan and the wife are
it
well
really
matched.
Shows that he has no idea.
Yeah.
He's his best friend in...
He lacks
insight.
Self-awareness.
Yeah.
That's really mostly what the book...
But all characters lack self-awareness except the son and...
Gerasim.
Gerasim.
Yeah. Which are the only ones who he likes.
Who he actually understands, yeah.
And we're really unpacking this, huh?
Yeah, but this was such a good book. I really enjoyed it
as well. The first, and when I bought it with my mom, she was like, yeah, this is a little bit difficult to read.
Really? I thought it wasn't difficult
and
at all.
I thought it was quite easy. I mean, there were a couple of words, because I think this is original, like, translated, like, a long time ago.
Yeah, I have the same as well. It's like old French sometimes.
Yeah, there were a couple of words, like, where it was a word, but they were just, like, the two words, which now would be separated, were just, like, one.
So it kind of messes with you, yeah.
Yeah. So that was weird a couple of times.
But I thought the way, like, the whole plot line was very interesting to read. Like, it made me want to read more.
Yeah.
Because it started off as after his death, and then it went into his whole life. And so I was like, I want to know what happens when he dies.
And
that's
the division
the main...
of chapters is... I was very impressed with that. I thought that was
especially
very well
at the end, they start getting smaller and smaller, the chapters, which is very interesting, because it's, like, it's almost like a movie, you know, how, it, like, when there were a lot of cuts...
Yeah.
It gets more and more intense.
Sure.
Maybe with the chapters, that's
that's
what he was trying to do.
Also, what I think... this book is very much long, drawn out, loads of commas, sentences. Sometimes an entire paragraph will be one sentence.
Yeah, because it's describing what he's thinking.
Like, look at that. That's all one sentence.
Yeah, it's a very...
And that's I just flipped open a random page and found a sentence that's like five lines long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not... long to the point where you're like, oh, I want to stop reading this.
Yeah,
it's more
and the
like,
way that the commas are used and stuff,
yeah,
it flows. It's very well done. And like the I don't know if you have that in French, but there's like they'll have a dash and then a thought and dash, and that's in the middle of a sentence.
Oh yeah,
and I love it when authors, Paul also does that quite a lot as well.
Yeah,
which
the
I really like
short
yeah
statements
yeah,
yeah. or like points
yeah.
that he wants to add. But yeah, and I thought the title is very interesting as well, like
the death
it's like
Ivanilla.
Shows it's the main point of the novel.
Yeah, and that's really exactly what this novel was.
It's a very good title, yeah.
It was the death of Ivan.
It's a spoiler, but it's a good spoiler.
spoiler indeed.
But yeah, I have like my book is composed of three short stories, which I'm probably gonna read because they're quite short.
Mm-hmm.
It's also The Master and the Servant.
This is like half the book already. So
yeah, exactly.
The other ones are really
much shorter. So
okay.
It's called The Master and the Servant and Three Deaths.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, it seems like it's part of the original book because Three Deaths and Master and Servant, which is both concepts that are explored in the book.
That's
but I read the back and apparently it's three, it says in French, I'm going to translate right now.
Okay.
It says three short stories, six deaths, six exceptional deaths.
Okay.
Including the one of Ivan Ilyich.
Yeah.
The suffering, the most celebrated suffering of literature.
Wow.
Which I thought was very nice.
That's very nice, yeah.
Can
you read that in French as well? Just
okay, sure. Trois nouvelles, six morts exemplaires, dont celle d'Ivan Ilyich, l'agonie la plus célèbre de la littérature.
Wow. Just,
very
ladies,
nice.
You heard it here first. Fantastic French.
And in 4321, I thought that was a sudden change of topic. The main character, in one of the, because it's four storylines, in one of the storylines he becomes a translator. Well, I mean, he does
on
the side of French poems, and he translates them to English, which I thought was great because
that's also in not Invisible, but in the Book of Illusions.
Yeah,
that's like what gets him busy. Again.
Yeah, I thought it was so good.
Yeah,
Paul Auster must have had an experience with that. I think in his life.
Yeah,
translation.
He's,
he lived in France, right?
Yeah, he lived in France for a couple of years, but he's also I think he speaks French as well. But he's also translated some stuff.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I think only screenplays, but he has.
We could read one of those, like me in French and you in English.
Oh, that would be very interesting.
That'd be interesting, yeah.
That'd be very cool.
Or like maybe a poem or something.
Yeah. Oh wow. Yeah, because poems you can discuss.
You can discuss fast and.
What
you
we
can
could read. Also do is. No, that wouldn't work. I was going to say, like, we each translate a poem into a different language, but that wouldn't really work because, you know...
Yeah, we wouldn't understand each other.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it's a good plan, yeah. Well, we had another idea as well. Now we're completely off the book. I assume.
That was the ending of the book, and we'll have the classic rambling at the end of the podcast.
Yeah, it's the best part, you know? We were talking with our friend, our Italian friend.
Oh,
I'm not going to name him yet. You know, you guys are going to find out soon.
But, okay, yeah, go ahead.
We had the idea of watching a movie, reading a book, and then watching the movie that's adapted for the book. And he has quite an extensive knowledge on movie.
He knows all, the director's names of even the worst movies, and I can name you my favorite. Well, my favorite, but... Nothing else than that, you know?
It's crazy, yeah. And so we went to go see a movie with him.
Yeah.
And after he gave us the idea of one specific movie, it's called No Country for Old Men, I think.
Yeah.
And he told us that that's one of the only cases where he's noticed that the movie is better than the book.
But that he said because the book is written in this way that allows a screenplay to be so good.
So that would be incredible to analyze. Yeah. And we'll have him as a guest, of course, so you guys can... meet the Italian man. He doesn't really listen to the podcast.
Maybe we can do that for a special episode 10.
We get a few... because we also still need to do Norwegian Wood.
Norwegian Wood.
Which is taking quite a while to read because it's quite a big book.
Because I had to read this book.
Also,
I'm at page 200, so I'm
pretty far.
Yeah, I'm pretty good.
And I'm hearing you're very much enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm very much enjoying it.
It's quite a good book.
Yeah.
And we'll probably get more people in because a lot of people have read this book. It's quite a... quite famous. I don't know if it's our age group that really likes this book or if it's just a generally
Norwegian
loved
Wood,
book.
You mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't heard of it before this year, and now that I've heard of it, everybody's heard of it.
Everyone
so
seems
Murakami.
That could also be because Murakami's so popular, and then that's his most popular and westernized book.
That's very true. So, yeah, we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
I think this was quite an extensive podcast, but we had more time... we had more time today thanks to the striking of teachers in Amsterdam.
Yeah, so...
Thank God.
Yeah, well, power to them, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Good luck, Ms. Willemsen, as you said in class. So we had time to play football and record the podcast.
Yeah, and we also have time to give you this quick message. Go follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We know you all want to know more.
Yeah, add that Twitter, you know, because we have one, which, you know,
no, we have
thanks
two.
Very
we
much.
Have two.
Oh, we have two. Yeah. Oh, who's the second person?
My brother.
We're going to be listening to this in 2 years. This is so sad. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody of my,
following. I don't even know anyone who has Twitter, but, you know.
Yeah, I'm guessing you bring more listeners to the podcast than I do because I don't tell anyone about it.
Yeah, exactly. Except because I'd rather just have it naturally develop.
We have mentioned it to our both our English teachers now. So
yeah,
I mean my English
did
teacher left.
Did she respond to you?
She hasn't responded yet, but I mean I hope she does.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of awkward if she doesn't. But yeah. Hi, Miss Crane, if you're listening now, you know, and hi, Mr. Minchin, who's we talked to yesterday.
Yeah.
But I think that was a good podcast.
I think so too. We'll see you
next week.
Next week.
For another recording.
We don't know what we'll do yet, but we'll let you know on our social media platform.
We'll improvise last minute.
Okay, see you next week.
Bye.